Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, do you think the Democrats were taking notes last night in preparation for their, fourth debate between what's left of two old white guys and a Clinton that they'll be hosting on, in 2 days, on a Sunday? They're debating on Sunday. Again, I'm surprised they didn't put this thing up against the Super Bowl on Super Bowl Sunday. What is the 2 a.m. time slot taken where you can show off your candidates? I mean, they very well may have on the stage a potential criminal, a hardcore socialist, and I guess a sex symbol with sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley. But did you watch this thing last night, Republican debate? This was, I don't know, there were parts that were very, very good, I thought. There were parts, of course, with most of these things, they get a little bit, tedious at points. They get a little bit, kind of salesy at some points. But all in all, I think the debate went very well. Of course, this time the Republicans only had 7 on the stage, still over twice as many as the Democrats will put on stage. But the 7, of course, were Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Ben Carson, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, and John Kasich. And look, to me, it's obvious in my estimation that John Kasich and Jeb Bush, they need to, there's no room at the table for them, I guess. I mean, John Kasich, there were long periods of the debate. In fact, I wrote in my notes as I was watching this, he was nearly absent. I mean, he and that's not all his fault. I'm not suggesting that. It's just, I don't know how relevant he is to much of this. And for those of you that like Kasich, this is not personal. I don't have anything against John Kasich. I think he's done some good things as governor. I don't live in Ohio. I live, of course, in the neighboring state of Indiana. But, I just felt like he's absent. I don't know that he brings much to the discussion. I feel like it's clear that the time is up for John Kasich. Jeb Bush, I mean, my goodness. I feel like this guy is very unconfident. He's very mechanical. You know, he keeps citing the things that he really shouldn't be citing. He reminds us of his experience as a politician, and this election is a lot of things. There is genuine anger amongst the conservative base against the crowd that thinks the government is swelling out of control. There's anti-incumbent anger, which sometimes gets lumped in with the first group of anger. The first group are those of us who believe that the Constitution is being trampled upon, that government is growing beyond its intended purpose, beyond its, what it should be. And then there's others that are just mad. They implicate everyone who's in D.C., and there's, look, if you're one of those folks, I think that there's good reason to be mad at most of these folks. Some have taken it to the point to where they're going to vote for Donald Cruz or Ben Carson or even Carly Fiorina expressly for those purposes, for that very purpose. We need someone who's an outsider, and I respect that. I do. I mean, the founders respected that. The idea of lifetime politicians was not something that the founders envisioned or aspired for America to become. So Bush up there talking about his experience as a politician. I mean, look, I don't mean this personal. In fact, a friend and myself were texting. I was on Twitter too, incidentally, but we were texting back and forth, and he made the comment that Jeb doesn't have any of the charm that George W. Bush had. Now, look, this is not meant to be a ringing endorsement for all the things of George W. Bush, but say what you will, the guy had a likability and a charm to some degree. I mean, there's some that just flat out hated the guy, and at the end, I mean, he had been so tarnished by the media, but he had an awkwardness to him. You know, things like, what did he say? Strategery, things like this. There was an awkwardness, but there was kind of a southern charm to him. I feel like Jeb got all the awkwardness, but none of the charm. And I just feel like the wheels have completely come off. I mean, this has been, I think, all these things were true from the very beginning with Jeb, but the question in my mind has always been, does he have enough money to be there at the end? You know, and that's a big question, I think. Does he have enough money? Does he maintain the support from those that, I don't know, the establishment donors, are they going to continue to give him money? Or have they decided now to give that to Marco Rubio or to Chris Christie? I don't think they've decided to give it to John Kasich. He would be, in my mind, the next one that they would give it to. But nonetheless, Jeb Bush is on the ropes. I think he's in big trouble. This is, you know, nothing earth-shattering here. This has been a long time coming. And for those of us that have followed politics and have a belief that this is about, you know, conservative ideology, the anti-establishment feelings in this country, sentiments in this country, we had hoped for this. We thought it might come to this, but to see it, which I think we're seeing it on stage, is something a little bit different. Ted Cruz, Donald Trump last night. I mean, that was something. I will say this. I think Ted Cruz, especially in the first, I have a note here at 10:12. So this was about halfway or so into this debate, which ran about almost 30 minutes over, according to the schedule that I saw. I think Cruz did an absolutely fantastic job, especially at the first half. Now, there's going to be some, especially when it comes to two things, I think. The attacks that Cruz received from Marco Rubio, which Rubio was on fire last night. I'm talking just the perceived value of a skilled debater. You know, we can talk about the substance of the things that he was saying in some instances, but I think he was on fire last night as far as presentation and debating skills. I mean, he came fired up. I think I can definitely see how he would impress people. I happen to think that, excuse me, my voice is, again, I'm struggling here with this voice cold problem for the better part of a week now. But I think that Ted Cruz is the one that's right on their head-to-head battle between Rubio and Cruz. But I try to be objective here, and I think Rubio came out on fire. He was really on point on some things. He made a couple of comments. One, I tweeted a couple of these out. He said, "Someone who lies to those four families of Benghazi victims does not deserve to be president." Thought that was absolutely spot on. He made another comment about gun shows are not where ISIS and terrorists are getting their guns. I mean, he's exactly right. And he did a very, very good job, I thought. Again, I think I come down on the side of Cruz on their head-to-head issues. I mean, at the end of the day, Rubio was a part of the Gang of Eight, the Amnesty crowd. Ted Cruz opposed that. Now, I know some of you are going to disagree with me vehemently and insist that Ted Cruz was actually the one that was in favor of amnesty, but I think it's clear what Ted Cruz was doing, what Ted Cruz was trying to do to stop the Gang of Eight. Looking at this as objectively as I can, looking at what I know about both these individuals, and really looking at who they saddled up beside. Marco Rubio was on the side of John McCain and Lindsey Graham. Two individuals that, in my estimation, you know, they want to talk about, you know, the establishment want to talk about people like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump as ruining the Republican brand. I would venture to say that John McCain and Lindsey Graham have done more to damage the Republican brand, because their positions get lumped in with conservative positions, because a lot of folks see conservatives and Republicans as a synonymous word. And you and I know differently. You know better. There are conservative Republicans, moderate Republicans, heck, even liberal, big government Republicans. But the point is, Marco Rubio did a good job, even though I do believe that Ted Cruz is the one that's right, especially on the issue of immigration and where he's come down on, his opposition to the Gang of Eight, to the pro-amnesty crowd in the Senate, which Marco Rubio was a part of. But overall, I think Cruz did a very good job. Trump did a very solid job. A good friend of mine, we were texting back and forth. He thinks that it was Trump's best performance so far. I don't think it was bad by any stretch. I think Trump is going to do fine at these things. In fact, if a couple of different candidates got some boos last night. Of course, Trump was spinning those to mean the people were booing against the people he was speaking against, and I'm sure there might have been some of that, but the crowd wasn't necessarily favorable to some of the things he was saying. Cruz got a lot of cheering, but there were points where I think he got a few boos as well. And there was a chunk of the debate where Cruz and Trump dominated that middle section of the first hour or so. And that's where the people like John Kasich kind of fell off the stage, Jeb Bush, even Ben Carson, who I respect a lot. I think I upset some Ben Carson fans on Twitter last night. Not my intent. I'll get into that here in a bit. But I think Ted Cruz did a great job. Donald Trump did a very good job. Marco Rubio did a very good job, even though, again, what I said earlier is true. I don't believe that I don't think what he's saying on a few issues is accurate. I think he's wrong, even though his presentation and the way he went after some folks was strategically very, very good. I think he did a very good job. Ben Carson, I like Ben Carson a lot as an individual, as a man. I think he is a high quality individual, a high integrity, very ethical, very moral, very intelligent individual. I mean, this guy is a very he's skilled. He was the best of the best at what he did. Not something most of us could do. I think he was funny last night. I think he did okay. I just think there were a couple times I got the feeling that Ben Carson, some of you that like him are gonna, don't misunderstand me here. I'm making observations. I got the feeling that he was enjoying it. He had some funny quips, some good one-liners. He spoke some truths. But I kind of got the feeling a couple of times that he was kind of just taking it all in and enjoying himself a little bit differently than, you look at the intensity between the Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and Marco Rubio. And Ben Carson's different than that. And that's not bad. I just wonder if the latest hits in the polls have, you know, shaken his confidence, or if he expects to, you know, what his expectations are. If he thinks he can still rally the troops and win. And, I think, to me, in my opinion, that's one of the things that concerns me about Ben Carson, is that he's... I think sometimes he doesn't have that fire that I think we need right now. I'm not making a universal statement and saying that, you know, leaders have to be brash. Leaders have to be as brash and bold as Donald Trump. And Carson is obviously not that, and he doesn't need to be. You don't need to be that way to be a solid leader. I'm not making that statement. I'm just saying, given the world stage right now and given the fire that exists, I think a lot of Americans want somebody who's perceived as a more intense fighter. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying he's weak. Actually, meekness is strength under control. I think he's very much like that. I think he's a morally strong and stable person. But there's, when I say the fight, is more apparent in some of the other candidates, even though you may not agree with my assessment as to whether or not that's important, I think you can see where I'm coming from. So anyway, got to stop and take our first break there. More after the break, so sit tight. We'll be back in just a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Friday, January 15th, two days before the Democrat debate, which I know you've been holding your breath, waiting to see this stage filled with a potential criminal, a socialist, and the sex symbol, Martin O'Malley himself, on a Sunday. Just surprised it's not Super Bowl Sunday or 2 a.m. on a Sunday. These are times that Democrats seem to want to pick, given their awful slate of candidates, given their absolutely atrocious previous debates. So hopefully they took a note or two from last night's debate, because that was a good debate by Fox Business. Neil Cavuto, Maria Bartiromo, I think they do a good job. I think it was fair. I think it was substantive. I mean, of course, some of the responses were maybe not substantive. They were sometimes personal and staged, and the traditional things that you would get in politics. That's just kind of the nature of the game, I guess. But overall, I think the debate was really good. And before those of you that love Carson, or, you know, I was thinking about this during the break, I really think he's a solid man. In fact, on one of my commercials that run, which I think may have even run over the break here, the Audible commercial, I reference a book written by Ben Carson. I say, what a good man and strong presidential candidate. I believe that. My observation is just that the perception of a lack, you know, that he has a lack of fire by many voters, I think is one of the reasons he's seeing a decline. You know, he may be able to come back, and if he does, I mean, I'm a guy, I could vote for Ben Carson, I absolutely could. But there's others I could vote for as well. I'm just, he's ahead of many of these guys on the stage for me. So don't misunderstand me. I just think my observation last night was he was enjoying it. He was having a good time. You know, some of the others were in a fairly intense debate about natural born citizenship. You know, then there was the whole issue with Cruz and Trump about New York values. Rubio and Cruz about immigration, the Gang of Eight, votes on the Senate floor back and forth. I mean, most people were gunning for Cruz last night, and he was firing back. And I just feel like Carson was, his approach was different. I know that's appealing to folks, some folks, but I think overall his perceived lack of fire and feistiness, maybe. I think that may be an issue that he's going to have to figure out how to deal with if he's to come back. Just my opinion. But I want to talk a little bit about those two issues I just alluded to. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, the natural-born citizenship debate. You know, for the first time since I've seen Trump go after somebody, this is the first time that I think in a head-on-head exchange, Trump was not the clear winner. I'm not saying that Cruz wiped the floor with him or anything, but it was different. You know, normally we see Donald Trump, when someone gets the wrath of Trump or, you know, faces a full-on attack from Donald Trump, they don't do well. You know, Rand Paul, John Kasich, Jeb. He comes out dominating these guys. I didn't sense that with Ted Cruz. I also didn't sense that Trump went after him as aggressively as he did John Kasich or especially Jeb or Rand Paul. In fact, if you watch the exchange later on in the debate between Donald Trump and Jeb Bush, the intensity and the kind of attack dog mentality that Trump has, I feel was much stronger against Jeb Bush than it was against Ted Cruz. I think there's a mutual respect for these guys, but they're trying to win the nomination. And they're in a close battle, especially in Iowa. We'll see where it goes beyond that. Trump nationwide seems to still be dominant in the polls. But Trump doesn't want to lose Iowa. Trump doesn't want to have to go out to these rallies where he's constantly saying, I'm a winner. I love winning. You know, I'm going to make America great again. He doesn't want to say that in the shadow of the first votes being cast and him not being the winner of those. So the exchange was good, and so Cruz says to Trump, you know, Donald Trump, those that are hardcore believers that natural-born citizen means that you must be born both in the United States and born of two parents who are also born in the United States. By that very criteria, Mr. Trump, this is again Ted Cruz, by that very criteria, you could not be president either because your mother was not born in the United States, although she was a citizen. Of course, then both of them offer one another the VP position. I still think, you know, there's a lot of hay being made about this today, but I think that while it got intense, I don't think that this fight with Trump is as contentious and as divisive. I still think that there's hope, I guess, that these two aren't gonna go for one another's throats. I do. I could be wrong. But I think that. Then there was the whole issue with Ted Cruz saying Donald Trump embraced New York values, And then, of course, I love Trump's response, by the way. He acted indignant, as though an insult from someone on stage was just more than he could bear. He almost acted completely flabbergasted that someone wouldn't suggest such a thing. And he went on, of course, he cited, you know, 9/11, which is not what Cruz was talking about. Cruz wasn't saying anything about 9/11 or the terrorist attacks. I mean, the things that came out of New York on 9/11 were stories of heroism, were stories of bravery, were stories of sacrifice and strength, and a community and a huge city that rose from the ashes, rebuilding what was destroyed by maniacal terrorists, Osama bin Laden. And Cruz wasn't talking about that. What Cruz was talking about, you know, I saw a tweet by Todd Starnes, and it said, for those of us that don't live in New York, we all understand what Ted Cruz meant by that. I mean, Ted Cruz is talking about the mentality of high government intervention. You know, he's talking about the mentality that says that Mayor Bloomberg has to take care of you because you drink too much soda. I mean, Mayor de Blasio, I mean, keep in mind, they've voted for a mayor with communist sympathies when he spent his honeymoon in, I think, was it the Soviet Union? It was a communist country. Mayor de Blasio, Bill de Blasio. A pretty far-left mayor. And I think what Ted Cruz was saying in a lighthearted way, but to try to pin Donald Trump along the lines of, you know, hey, the things that are popular in your city are things that are not conservative. It was not meant to be an attack on the people of New York, and that was clear to people like me. But of course, Trump is trying to make it look as though it's an attack on the city, and he acted indignant, and as though Cruz was criticizing the sacrifices made on 9/11 by New York City, and that just really wasn't the case. But that's sparked a debate on, you know, on social media, and this has of course upset some New Yorkers, and I can understand if that's your position. I don't look. That's not what Ted Cruz was saying. He wasn't attacking the character of New York. I think he was simply saying there's a lot of things in New York going on in the government that we don't want to see in our federal government, which we do see in our federal government in other ways, in some of the same ways. But the point is, it's not an indictment against the individual citizens or their sacrifices on 9/11 or their loss on 9/11. It was more of a statement directed at the things that have come to identify New York in a political sense. So anyway, there was a contentious dialogue there, and then of course the Cruz Rubio thing we talked about earlier. You know, some people are going to side with Rubio on this. I mean, there's a big chunk of people out there that believe that Ted Cruz is a supporter of amnesty, and he's trying to paint the picture that Rubio is. There's people that believe that Ted Cruz is not eligible to run as president of the United States because he was born to one American parent, not two, and he was born on Canadian soil, not in the U.S. And is Donald Trump right? Will this be taken to court? And if you pay attention to what Trump said, I think Trump gets mischaracterized here. He is not, that I've heard him say, he's not said Ted Cruz is ineligible to run as president. What he said is, this guy may be, should he win the nomination, or should he be my vice presidential nominee, a lot of what we stand to gain here could be called into question by the left, and this is going to end up in court. And I think on that issue, Trump is probably right. I mean, the Democrats, I mean, flashback to 2000 when one of the attorneys that Trump cites as a source that Ted Cruz may not be eligible for president is Lawrence Tribe, who was the attorney representing Al Gore in Florida, or one of them anyway, in the Florida recounts. So the Democrats are going to use every single tool at their disposal, even if it's questionable, to try to win this election. And given the weakness of their candidate, especially Hillary Clinton, again, who may be ending up in an orange jumpsuit or with a house arrest bracelet on, and that may be wishful thinking here, but it's possible. It's more possible in my mind now than it was even a couple of months ago. In fact, there's stories coming out of the FBI that there might be a major shakeup in the organization if they do not indict Mrs. Clinton. Because the agents apparently feel pretty strongly that this is a clear case where Mrs. Clinton should be indicted. Then they've got their bench is, you know, the Nutty Professor and sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley. You know, a socialist and a sex symbol. And a potential criminal. That's their field. It's understandable why they're begging Biden and they're begging Elizabeth Warren. They'll probably start begging Al Gore. They're begging everyone they know to somehow find a way to get into this field to stop the madness. But anyway, the folks that have those candidates and the MO, the modus operandi, the method of operation that the Democrats have, they'll do anything and everything. And suing because they believe Ted Cruz is ineligible for president is definitely something that is a strong possibility with this grunt bunch. So anyway, guys, I got to stop and take one more break. When we get back, we'll wrap up for the day, so sit tight. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Welcome back to the End of Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It is Friday. It is January 15th. Again, Democrat debate in 2 days on a Sunday. Two old white guys and a Clinton. Can't wait. Can't wait to see what we learn from that magnificent debate. So, anyway, I did not incidentally watch the first debate. Didn't really see what went on there. I've lost interest in the early debate. There's a couple of those folks I like still. I just look, we're to crunch time, and these, if you're not going to move towards the top, it's hard to in a 40-minute show for me to spend much time talking about what's going on with what you're saying, especially if it's not on the main stage. So anyway, did not watch that, but a couple of other things I want to tell you about behind the scenes here that you may have noticed over the past week. Number one, I have changed my recording schedule to where I'm now recording this. This is actually Friday, January 15th. Normally, in the past, I would record the night before, late in the evening. And it was creating some problems for me. You might imagine when you talk about things like this and read and prepare, it takes a while to unwind, I suppose. So I was really having trouble getting sleep. It was just creating havoc on my schedule. So I changed to where I'm recording in the mornings, and I'm posting the show, making it live. It's a little bit later than it was. In the past, it had been early in the morning. I mean, I would put it to publish around 3 a.m. typically, you know, 3, 4, 5 a.m. I tested different times up to maybe, say, 7 a.m. But now this show is posting. It should be live around 10 o'clock. I'm going to get this system streamlined here, and it'll be, you know, 10 or 11 a.m., I think, is what we'll end up with. But anyway, I'm recording in the mornings. So I have a little bit more up-to-date information on some things than I did when I was recording in the evenings, number one. Number two, the podcast is released a couple hours later than it was. So let me know if this creates a problem for you, because this is what I'm trying to do is build the audience and make sure that we accommodate what you want here. So if this presents any sorts of problem for you, I'd love to know that. Email todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can tweet me at Common Sense Gear. The other thing I wanted to briefly mention was you're going to see the format slightly change. The length is going to remain the same, but I'm in the stages of beginning to talk with folks about syndicating this full-length podcast. And for those of you that don't, you know, most of you will probably know what that means, but I just wanted to share this with you, especially for those that, you know, have been following us from the beginning and are interested in the growth and the reach of this show. Syndication essentially just means that we prepare a program that radio stations can plug into their format, and they would actually, you know, purchase the show, and then they would sell advertisements to cover the cost and then generate an evil profit. An evil profit, of course, evil, right? For their station, so that they can pay their workers, keep the lights on, do marketing, give the charity, sock some money away for the business. All good things, but in order for me to syndicate it, I've got to change the structure just a little bit. So there might be one or two more breaks that we have. I'm going to have to play with this a little bit, but I'm just getting this ready so that when it's time to go to full-on syndication, which is something I'd like to do, then we're ready to do that. So anyway, just a little behind the scenes information about the show. So other things in the news that I don't have time to talk about today, this Iran situation where they have captured our, you know, taken our sailors hostage and had taken our boats, and some of the things floating around about that story, something still doesn't add up with this whole thing. Not entirely sure what that means yet. Just skeptical of what's going on. This sort of thing is not supposed to happen. So I've got some plans to talk with some folks that may be able to shed some light on this for me. So anyway, another thing we're going to be looking at doing, since we're kind of talking about the show format here, that last comment reminded me of this. More interviews, I think, moving forward. Not that the show will be an interview every day. I never envision that. That's just not the nature of this show. However, I do want to get some other, viewpoints and opinions on here to help strengthen the conservative movement, to help get the message out. You know, all of us are messengers for the conservative movement, for the constitutional conservative movement, but we all have our own different strengths, our different audiences, our different reach. And so I want to collaborate a little bit more with these folks, and you know, we're going to have some of these individuals on here. So moving forward, we'll be having some more interviews. But guys, that's going to wrap it up for me. Another fun, exciting, week now behind us, and another to come. We're only 17 days away from Iowa. I think New Hampshire is, what, 8 days after that, and then South Carolina maybe a week or two after that. So we are quickly approaching the beginning of the primary season, and this is going to shake itself out here, I think, fairly quickly, but you never know. I mean, there's still the possibility, as we've talked about here before, that there won't be a clear-cut winner of the nomination until the convention, and it could include a brokered convention. So we'll be there every step of the way. But guys, that's going to wrap it up today. As always, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.